Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthcare Business Women's Association Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm not only the VP of Business Development for Ashfield Healthcare, but also an HBA, as we call it, volunteer leader, and your host for our program today. Now, for those of you who don't know the HBA is a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of their female talent. Now, today our program series titled Career Transitions, Moving from A to Z with Success and Purpose, supports this mission by exploring real career journeys and sharing key learning from our HBA members. And today's chapter is what I like to call From Industrial Engineer to Pharmaceutical Executive. And I'm excited to have as my guest Patricia Bradley, the Vice President of the Education Program at Novo Nordisk. Now, Patricia and I have been long-term HBA volunteer leaders. We've worked on many different initiatives together for the association. And what I like best about Trish is that she says it real. No sugarcoating. No one learns from practice, rehearse, answers. Trish shares the real deal. So welcome, Trish.
Thank you, Julie. This is fun. I'm excited to be here and just share some of my learnings along the way.
And we're glad to have you. Now, Trish, you've accomplished so much in your career. And in prepping for the interview, I was surprised to learn that you started as a UPS delivery person in Manhattan. Interesting. Can you share some insight about that early career choice?
Oh, you know, it seems everybody is always fascinated about the UPS driving the truck. And yes, I did in Manhattan. And really where that came from was out of trying to differentiate myself. When I first got out of college, I had a summer job at Lehman Brothers downtown on Wall Street. And basically, they just kept sending me for coffee. I was there to get people coffee, and that was not the job that I signed up for. So when I tried to apply for a more permanent type of position with them, and I applied to take the Series 7 and the Series 63, they turned me down. And they took men who had been there for a much shorter period of time and approved them to go forward to take the test, and I got denied. So in speaking with one of my girlfriends, you know, who was a few years ahead of me in college, she said, Trish, you have to go into UPS's training program. She goes, there's one issue, though. You're going to have to drive a truck, and there's no time period on it. It could be 3 months. It could be 6 months, but you're going to have to learn the business from the ground up. And she had done it. And I said, okay, I'm game. I'm going to have to change the way people look at me. I didn't come from Harvard. I didn't have, a fancy school behind me. I had a state school behind me. And so I had to do something so people would look at me differently. And I might stand out when somebody looked at my resume, because at that point your resume meant a lot. And so I applied to their management training program and actually got accepted. And part of that, I had to drive a truck in Manhattan. And I will tell you, the first week I was there, they made me deliver a package to my old office, which, of course, was humbling to say the least.
Oh, my God. But how exciting. I mean, I will tell you, the last time I drove in Manhattan was the last time I drove in Manhattan. That was it. So that took a lot of courage. And I know that that's a requirement within UPS that everybody starts on the truck. And I admire that, because I don't feel you can really understand what you're selling until you actually do it. And the other tidbit I learned is that you learn that you only make right-hand turns. Is that correct with UPS?
Well, that is the preferred way to turn, that you really are. So industrial engineering is all about time and motion and really getting those economies of scale and doing things as quickly as possible. So what happened in UPS's training program when I started, you did drive the truck. After I finished driving the truck, I was put into the UPS engineering program. And then they send you to UPS schools and all of that. Part of that is logistics. It is about making things as efficient as possible. So there is a whole method to the madness. And you had to come up with plans and different things. And part of it is to minimize left turns because there's a lot of idle. So you do try to set up routes where you make right turns because you don't have to stop. Except for in New York, you have to stop at a red light. But anywhere else in the country, you can make a right on red and keep going. And so it made it efficient. It saved them gas so they wouldn't sit at a light idling. And so you learn that sometimes that little incremental savings can have a big benefit when you put it on the scale of a company the size of UPS and that many drivers and that many trucks. So it was a principle that actually did come back later on to help me in my current role, but at the time I wouldn't have realized it. You know, I didn't know that it was going to ever come back.
Well, you certainly have made a lot of right turns since that time, if I may say so. But getting down to, so what's your education in, as an engineer? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, my background actually in school was economics. So I had a dual degree in my undergrad, which was economics and then political science. And political science was my backup plan because I wasn't sure I was going to pass all of my economics courses. So I had to get out in 4 years because I was paying the bill myself and couldn't afford to keep funding it. So I had I basically had a dual major trying to make sure that one way or another I was going to get out on time. And so I wound up in economics, and then UPS, they send you, you know, they have their own internal process for training industrial engineers. They're very specific about what they want and how they want it, and they're well known for their time and motion studies and logistics. And so they will then take you through their process, but I was in essence picked because I had a degree in economics. So they assumed I was good with numbers, and if I could do that, they could train me. And that's what happened. And I wound up doing that for 3 years and did logistics. I did, I would sit in facilities and observe them and then come back with big CAD drawings telling them how to improve their efficiencies and touch things less often and try to save money in the margins and places like that. So one of the first ones was Coach Bag, before Coach Bag was the famous big Coach Bag it is now. I got to sit in their facility when they were in New York in the Furrier and Leather District and look at how they handled stuff through their building. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I told them they really had to move. Their cost per square foot was too high, but it was part of trying to make them efficient. And then I did, you know, some mail order catalogs and some other smaller companies in New York City. And you learn a lot, and you watch different businesses and see it kind of from the back door, not just from the showroom. So it was a lot of fun, but not something I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Absolutely. And what a solid foundation that you had from that experience, you know, coupled with your education. And, you know, it just makes me want to go out and buy a new Coach bag. But I already have a bunch of them. Love Coach. But you mentioned something. You said, you know, you had a great foundation, but there was a point in time when you said, well, this is great, but there's got to be more. Tell me about that decision process and where you went once you decided it was time to make a change.
I was really young. I actually don't think I knew exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew I was not going to hang out in shipping rooms and want to be in warehouses for the rest of my life. It's a pretty tough lifestyle, and you're in, you know, warehouses are in very industrial parts of town. You travel all the time, but you're not traveling to a nice, beautiful city. You're going to the outskirts where the warehouses are. So I made a decision that I wasn't going to keep traveling every single week. And I had worked in pharmacies throughout college during the summer as a pharmacy tech. This is before it was as regulated as it is now. And I would, you know, basically set up things for the pharmacist to check before they would go out. And I decided I was going to apply for pharmaceutical sales because why not? It sounded like fun. And, you know, I was young and really just wanted some type of sales job. And they liked the story about how I drove the truck, and I actually got interviews and wound up ultimately getting hired and started as a sales representative in New York City. And I guess they thought I would be one of the few people who could drive New York City without a problem. So that may have been the default why I got the job, but, you know, you take any benefit you can or any hook you can to do something and do it well. And then it was my job to be a good salesperson and try to use that to launch a new career. And so I did, and I started. I was a rep for Syntex Laboratories, which makes Aleve when it was prescription, and I sold it on the Upper East Side of Manhattan.
Well,
and that's
I
how I wound up in pharma.
I definitely would have hired you, being a former sales manager overseeing New York City. knowing how to drive the streets is a key component, but that coupled with your business acumen would have sold me. So that's a really exciting shift there. So you went from UPS and you went to the farm industry and started as a rep. What a great job. What happened from there?
Well, if you know anything about pharma back then, companies, Aleve went over the counter, right? So you're familiar with it in its over the counter name,
right?
But it was Anaprox at the time, and it wound up going generic. And when that happens, the company disintegrated. So basically, it got sold off in pieces just for the products. Procter and Gamble bought Aleve and brought it over the counter, and the company went through a layoff. So I actually got laid off. I had another job, and then I decided to go into startup companies because I thought for my career it was going to take too long to get the experience that I wanted, so I would be a little bit more diversified. And I knew if I went to a startup that there are so many different things that you could do there that they would allow me to do a lot more in a much shorter time period. So I actually went to a startup company that was in female healthcare for pap smears. And some of that technology actually exists today as people who have ThinPrep and all these new preparations. That didn't exist at the time. And that's the standard of care at this point in time. So I went into a startup. I would do everything from negotiating contracts to selling to physicians, to selling laboratory equipment and all of that. And I did not know what I was doing. And, I think one of the key learnings was not to be afraid and to tell people sometimes when you didn't know what you were doing. I had more customers train and teach me on how to do capital equipment purchases and different things from hospitals that had to be done with protocols. So I was surprised how helpful people would be, especially when you were open and honest. But I learned a lot at those startups, and I did two in a row in female healthcare before I came to Novo Nordisk. And I did that to get a lot in a short time period. And I think a lot of people do that now with the explosion of startups in healthcare we see with digital health and other things. So there's a lot going on, and a lot of it is fresh and new. And I found that to be a great training ground to learn a lot very quickly.
Yeah. I can't agree with you more. I think the startup experience does give you that firsthand understanding of what it takes to make something happen. And when you're learning a lot and you're managing multiple work streams and responsibilities, you have a tremendous growth potential. So I understand that decision, and you did it twice. And then how did you get to Novo?
Well, then I decided that I was married at the time. I did want to start a family. I needed to stop traveling, and startup life is a little crazy. You really are doing a lot. And I decided I needed to settle down, so I picked a small company that was in my backyard, so their home office would be closer to me, and I figured I might as well go for proximity. Picked one close. It was small, so I figured it wasn't big pharma. I wouldn't be completely lost. And I actually kind of took a step back and took a position as a district manager for all of Greater New York. And my job was to get ready for a launch. They were really trying to expand across the U.S., and I was to lead the team right here in New York City. And so I did that, and that's Novo Nordisk, and that's where I am currently. I have been here now 17 years, which never thought that was going to happen.
Right. I think you joined an organization. I remember joining Bristol Myers and say, well, I'll be here a few years, and then I'll go do something else 15 years later. So I understand that. So, right? So there's a reason that you've stayed. So we talk about growth in career, and then we talk about growth within an organization. Can we explore a little bit what you've done in your career with Novo Nordisk?
Sure. I mean, here it was a small company, but it was on the edge of a pandemic with diabetes exploding. So the company I didn't know at the time, but was about to have rapid growth. And so I came on as a district manager for New York, was very successful, had won Circle of Excellence, which would be like a president's club, had won that there. And then I had requested to be, moved to New Jersey to be a little bit closer to home. After being successful again in another district, I actually started interviewing for positions in-house. So I took a position on one of the brand teams as a product manager to learn, just to learn that side of it. I never thought I was going to stay in marketing, but I thought it would be a great experience. I did that for a period of time, then went back out into the field as a regional director for New England, and then really learned about quality measures, integrated health systems, manage markets and those things, because New England was such a tightly controlled market and was influenced by so many things. So I learned a lot there. After watching that, I decided to go back in-house into managed markets because I said, well, if everything is going to contracts, let me get on that side of it. And I did that. I was in long-term care, GPO contracting hospitals and long-term care. And then from there, I got voluntold to take over a contract for a small group of educators that we had doing some work for us in the field, but it was very small. And when I took over the contract, I looked at it and said, well, this makes no sense. And instead of just saying it makes no sense and we shouldn't renew the contract, I wrote a business plan to the president with a new proposal of a new business unit and to take the money they were investing in that, bring something in-house, and set up what we called at that time the Diabetes Education Program. And he basically read through my plan 10 slides later, said yes, and gave me $20 million to do a startup within a large pharma company. And I was
wow.
a senior director at the time. I wasn't even a vice president. I walked out of that meeting and went, holy cow, did that just really happen? I didn't think decisions happened like that at the time. I thought there'd be this big committee and processes. And I don't know what I was expecting, but I sure wasn't expecting, okay, here you go, and here's $20 million. And then I had to start. I was employee number one, and my first hire was a college intern that was going to help me, you know, like as a research assistant, figuring out everything I had to do. And that's when, you know, you go back to the startups. I had to write job descriptions. I already had a business plan. I had already done the financials. And that all came back from UPS, right, having that way of logging everything and keeping track and keeping a very detailed project plan so that I wouldn't forget the things that needed to be done and I could hold people accountable who didn't work for me to help me in this process. But we had to figure out the profile to hire, who was going to be successful in the job. I had to create the content, and then I had to start hiring them. And I hired 100 people to start. And then we wound up going through two expansions. We have over 300 people now in the group, and I owned all of the marketing, all of the operations, and all of the field teams. So we have educators in the field, district managers, and then directors, and then an in-house operations team and marketing team that support this function now. So it was a wild ride, let's just say that.
Wow, but how well prepared you were for it. And I want to know the name of the CEO that gave you $20 million in 10 slides. I don't believe that person exists anymore in the industry, but they were certainly confident that you'd be able to take this and make it happen, and you did. And what a success story for you. So, you know, think about it. You've knitted everything you've done together in this career. What's next for you, Trish?
What's next for me? I think, you know, I'm very interested in population health and digital health and what's happening, and I think that plays well into both existing pharma, emerging companies. I think a lot of this is about strategic partnerships between companies going forward, and so the model is changing. Things are not all in-house now, and that's really what I'm looking at. So I am spending a lot of time meeting others that I will bring to Novo Nordisk for potential partnerships or different types of opportunities that we should look at as we try to maneuver through this changing landscape. And then I also think it's important, managed markets is a huge part of this, and I stay very close to that. And I also think that the government, Medicaid and Medicare services is something to really keep an eye on because that tends to be the leader, and then the commercial business follows, and so much now is controlled by managed care, that I think that that's really a part to watch while also keeping an eye on digital health and telehealth. So that's kind of what I'm looking at now, and keeping an eye on things and connecting and trying to connect Novo Nordisk to many people involved in it, because you never know who your partners are going to be in the future.
Oh my God, I'm going to need a third eye to keep track of all of that. But so, you know, what advice, Trish, would you give your junior self on career transitions and navigating your career?
Well, if anything, I would tell myself to be calm at times when things seem a little crazy, because there's a lot of chaos in business these days, and there was even then. And I got good advice from actually somebody who works for me about the best job is the job you create for yourself, And that, you know, always doing your homework to make sure you have, you look at things in the bigger picture when you're going to present it. I see a lot of people now who present ideas for pilots or new initiatives, and it's just the idea. They haven't done their homework. So if I had, you know, I think looking back, realizing you have to do your homework and have a pretty comprehensive plan when you pitch things and be ready to go right away and then do it without fear. I mean, and then having a really good support network helps too.
Great.
And that's what HBA did for me. It's a great support network. I use it all the time.
Yeah. Tell me more about that. You know, you said the HBA has been a great support network. What other things has HBA prepared you for or helped you with in your career?
So, you know, not too long ago, I was involved with the Circle of Advisors, which is, you know, smaller groups of people that get together who are really there to help each other peer-to-peer. And I think that that's one of the best things you can get. When I look back at my career, it wasn't like I had no mentor above me who really was trying to guide me. I had really close friends who were at my level or a level below me that we would help each other. We would check each other's homework. We would look at things. Setting that up for yourself externally, outside of your company, is important too. And I think HBA is such a great connection to do that with people who are outside of your organization, so you stay fresh and you're not siloed. And that I value more than anything else. And I really love that about HBA. And that's why I continue to stay very involved. I love meeting people who look at things differently than I do.
Right. Absolutely. The mentorship program is tremendous at the HBA. And I agree with you. Having a network of other female executives to lean on and to share best practices with has been really helpful for me as well. But, you know, you've had an exciting career journey, Trish, and we so appreciate you sharing that with us today. And we hope that the members listening appreciate Trish's insights. She's a tough cookie. She's fearless. She's fearless, and she's got lots of eyes. She's got lots of eyes. And Trish, we wish you continued success in your career and as well in your personal life. And today we're going to end the program reminding everybody that our next interview is going to be with Diane Bryson, and she's the president of the Patient-Inspired Strategies. And her story is around going from corporate to contract, which is a huge trend today. I hear someday we're all going to be contractors. And I hope I'm retired by then. So thank you, everybody, and have a great day. HBAL. Thanks, Trish.
Thank you.